All right, so I'm Jerry Malicote. I'm with Rainbow Elder Care of Greater Dayton, as well as Public Health, Dayton Montgomery County. And I'm also part of a committee that is working here locally on LGBTQ herstory and history for the local Dayton area. I'm here today with Richard Wilson, also known as Dickie Wilson. Hi, Dickie. How are you?
Good. I'm glad to be doing this, help you out.
Good. Thanks. I appreciate it. So, Dickie, tell me about yourself. When you were born and...
Well, I was born right here in Dayton at St. Elizabeth Hospital in 1941, just a couple months before the war broke out, World War II broke out, and grew up in Belmont and have pretty much lived all my life in Dayton, someplace in Dayton. I've moved around quite a bit when I was younger, but that's pretty much.
Okay. So when did you begin to realize that you were gay?
When I look back on my life, I think I've been gay all my life. When I was a young boy, I didn't know exactly what it was, but I knew that I was attracted to same-sex people. I tried to hide from it for a while after I got roughed up in high school, and then I developed a crush on one of the guys on my first job, and it became so serious that there was no doubt in my mind that I was gay.
So you said you got roughed up in school. So tell me about that.
Well, I had written a note to the girl that was sitting next to me and passed it to her, and somehow that note either said that he was cute or handsome or something, and she recognized that I liked boys, and she passed it around before lunch, and they lured me out of the school to a greasy diner that was a block away, and I went up there and had lunch with them. And on the way back, then two or three of the roughnecks started throwing punches at me, and I was able to dodge all of them. And then that was in the spring of 1957. And then on my last day of school, they threw eggs at me as I was walking home, and I was able to dodge all those eggs. And shortly after that happened, somebody threw a rock through the front window, but we didn't know who it was, and I didn't say a word about it. So, but that's as close to any tragedy that I've come close to.
Mm-hmm. So was that the first time that you came out to someone in that note in school, or do you remember the first time you came out to someone, and how did that go?
Well, I didn't really come out because I didn't know what it was myself. The next day after that happened, I asked another classmate what on earth went on, and she said, well, they think you're a homosexual. And I said, well, what on earth's that? I didn't even know what that meant. And I went to the library, and all I could find in the dictionary was that it was somebody that liked their own kind. So obviously after being roughed up, I thought, well, it must be something pretty serious, pretty bad, that people don't like it. So I just tried my best to act as normal and straight and not let anyone know that I saw attractive people. So
you mentioned that you had a crush on someone that you worked with when you were a younger man. Tell me about that.
Well, I was 18 years old. It was my first job, and the young man that replaced me as a messenger boy, I pretty much fell in love with the guy. He was just a splendid person, and uh, uh, as it got more and more serious, why he backed away from it, and there was a another man that worked real close to us that recognized what was going on, and he told me, he said, well, there's a lot of people like you in the world. And I said, there are? I said, well, introduce me to some of them. So that next day he introduced me to a man named Dino, who was the clerk of my superintendent. And Dino introduced me to probably a half a dozen or a dozen other people. And that same night, they took me down to a gay bar in northeast Cincinnati called Jerry's Bar. And that's how I came out. There was just no doubt in my mind that I was gay. I didn't know any gay people. I'd never been involved with any gay people until that night.
And where were you working?
I was working at National Cash Register Company.
Okay.
That was the best at the time. That was the best place in Dayton to work. And so
what happened that night? You said you went out to a bar called Jerry's.
We went to the bar, and this was in 1960, the summer of 1960. Back in those days, the police would always walk into bars, to gay bars, and strut around and check everybody out. This bar had a doorman that was in a little vestibule in front of the building, or next outside the building, and he had a switch there that he could turn on a red light inside the bar, because it was against the law to dance with a same-sex person, a male or female, is against the law. So when that red light came on, when the police came, he would turn that red light on, and we'd all sit down at our table and just be sitting there talking, and the police would walk in and strut around and walk back out. I was never arrested like what started Stonewall in New York City. I was never in an arrest like that, so I've been lucky.
Yeah. So as a young man, you went into the military. Is that right?
That's right. I was single, and in the early 60s, they drafted anyone that was not single or in college,
not married.
And not married. Mm-hmm. So I knew I would have to go into the service. So when I got my draft notice, I told all my friends, I said, I'm not going to write any letters, because I knew that they had opened letters and spied on people. So I just completely played it straight for the best I could for 2 years, and was successful in serving my country. They made me a military policeman, of all things. And I just about died when I read my orders that I was going to become a military policeman. But I survived, and I enjoyed it. Looking back on it, I enjoyed it. I learned an awful lot.
And you never had any experiences with other men or anything when you were in the military?
Not at the Army base, no. I would come home on a 3-day pass or go several hundred miles from the base, but I never messed around with anybody at work.
Did they ask you whether you were gay or, quote, homosexual when you entered the military?
When I was inducted at Fort Thomas, Kentucky, they one of the questions was, are you a homosexual? And you had a yes and a no box, and I checked the no box, and the fellow that I... one of my neighbor buddies that was gay, he checked the yes box and he vanished immediately. And I never saw him again after that. But I checked no and went in and served, went through basic training. The first year I was not with anybody, but then after my grandmother died, I came home on a 2 weeks leave being several hundred miles from where I was stationed, I felt it was relatively safe to go into a gay bar. So I went in and messed around with a few people, but... Mm-hmm.
And what bar was that?
That was the stage door.
Here in Dayton?
Down, not the current stage door. It was the one that was where Elder Bierman's department store was at, and they tore it down to build the Elder Bierman department store on 2nd Street, and it moved over to Jefferson Street. Mm. So the first stage door was a nice big bar. It had a circular, the center of it was circular. You could walk all the way around it, and you could see the persons on the other side through the liquor bottles. So it was a very interesting, very nice bar. I enjoyed that very much.
Let's see. And so when you were in the military, you were a military police officer. And I remember once you telling me a story about being in, I think, Selma?
Yes. They woke us up in the middle of the night, and we boarded airplanes. Pope Air Force Base was right next to where I was stationed, so they boarded us on C-130s, and they flew the whole battalion down to Montgomery, Alabama, as a peacekeeping force when Dr. King brought his group in from Selma, Alabama, into Montgomery, and we stood along the last mile or so of the parade route before he got to the courthouse at parade rest, just to keep peace as a show of force. We didn't have any ammunition in our guns, and our bayonets were the only means that we had to defend ourselves, and they were tucked inside of our shirts, so they said that they didn't want the Russians to use that as propaganda against Americans. So we were just stood there with no other than an empty rifle. That's all it showed in the news clippings. Mm-hmm.
So you were there to help keep everyone safe, not
correct
resisting Martin Luther King Jr. and his folks, but instead to help keep everyone's safe.
Right. We were there just to protect them and make sure the trouble didn't break out. If trouble would have broken out, we would have been there to have helped.
But then eventually trouble did break out there, but I think it might have been a second day.
That was before.
Oh, was it?
That was before that.
Oh, okay.
Before we got down there. That's probably why they took us down there. Because they were afraid that it might break out again.
I see. So you said that the government was afraid that the Russians would try to exploit any incident. And so that was a period where we were headed into or in the midst of a Cold War, what was called the Cold War with Russia. And that was also on the heels, the McCarthy era here in the United States, where there was a sort of a communist scare, but then that also played out in the LGBTQ community as what was known as the Lavender Scare, right?
That's right. As a young man, young boy in the 50s, McCarthy scared put fear in all citizens in America. He went on witch hunts for communists, and he just scared everyone to death. And my parents would not allow us to pull the window shades down in the living room at night because they did not want people to think we were communists. And that stuck with me all these years. Because today everybody closes their house up at night, but they didn't back then.
So somehow that was an indication that someone might be a communist if they had their shades pulled down. They had something to hide.
They were afraid that they had secret meetings in their house if the house was closed up and you couldn't see in. So if people could see in the house, then there were no secret meetings going on.
And of course, the assumption was that anyone who was, quote, a homosexual, end quote, was also communist. And so they wanted to purge what we know as LGBTQ people from government employment because they considered them to be not only homosexual but also communists.
Yes, that came along with President Eisenhower, and they convinced everyone that homosexuals could be blackmailed, and so they started looking and searching for homosexuals and ended up, I believe, getting rid of 10,000, I believe. It was an enormous amount, and there were a lot of people committed suicide over it. It just ruined their lives and their families' lives, and that's fear. That's just plain fear. And unfortunately, we're almost in a point today of believing fear and bad stuff like that.
Yeah. So how has your life so far been different than what you imagined when you were younger?
Well, after I got out of the Army, I started searching for a partner, I wanted a lifelong partner. That was my goal. And the first one lasted 4 years. The second partner lasted about 7, and then my last partner was almost 15 years, and he was out when I met him, and I knew that eventually I was going to come out, and we were in New York City, and he liked bookstores, old bookstores, and so while he was looking at old books, I would look at the bulletin boards, and the bulletin board had a small posting notice that there was going to be a march on Washington. And so I showed it to him and I said, let's go to this to see what it's like. And that was, it was just amazing. They estimated there were 1 million people up there in Washington. And I believe that was the second march on Washington that they had. And
yeah, the first one was in 1979. That was the very first one.
And then,
so then there was one in the 80s. Well, and maybe, there was one in the 90s.
Maybe that was, let me think, when did we go? I thought it was 93. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe it was 93 was the march that, mm-hmm. that we went to. And then I discovered that the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force had conferences once a year called Creating Change. And this particular year, the conference was in Detroit, Michigan. So I wanted to go to that to see what I could learn, and that changed my life forever. Mm-hmm. And that they showed us where the gay rights movement was at and where it was heading, and gave us all kinds of information and pointers as to how to go about organizing and opening hearts and minds, and I've been at it since then,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And enjoyed every minute of it.
So that's what made you decide to get involved in activism, was going to the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force Creating Change Conference.
That, and also the fact that they brought Robert Mapplethorpe's pictures to Cincinnati. And there was a gentleman down there in Cincinnati, I believe his name was Phil Burgess, and he tried his best to stop that, and they took him to court, and they won. And it was in the newspapers and the newscasts, and it was just a nightmare. And my partner and I went down and saw those pictures, and I suppose to somebody that wasn't open to sexual pictures, why I suppose it did shock a lot of people, but his photography was just my opinion was perfect. The light focus and the camera and everything, the pictures were just beautiful, and the artwork type stuff was beautiful, and so it, a lot of things added up to the fact that I wanted to help make the world a better place for the next generation. And after going to Creating Change, I knew I had to come out. I was working for General Motors at the time, and one of the workshops that I attended was put on by a lesbian from the Ford Motor Company in Detroit, and she had started a group there called Ford Globe, and these were all professional office people. But I listened to everything she had to say, and I knew I would like to do something back here in Dayton, but I was not in an office or a professional setting. So what I had to do was go through my union.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked over a period of time talking to various different people. How do I do this? How do I do that? Finally, I arrived at the fact that I needed to write a letter to the president of the International Union. The labor contract was coming up in a year or two, and so I wrote him a letter and asked him if he would consider bargaining for domestic partner benefits. And he, apparently he faxed that letter to General Motors in Detroit, and within two or three weeks I had a vice president calling me and to talk about what their plans were and what they were going to do. And within a couple of years they all announced it together. They didn't announce it, it just happened with no publicity whatsoever at Ford, Chrysler, and General Motors. They granted everybody domestic partner benefits if they wanted it.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. So then fast forward, you know, a few years, and then you got involved with Rainbow Elder Care of Greater Dayton, right?
Right.
So
I had been to a couple of conferences in New York City for SAGE.
Mm-hmm.
SAGE was just getting started back in the 80s and 90s, I would like to have started a chapter of SAGE here in Dayton, which SAGE at the time stood for Senior Action in a Gay Environment. But I needed help to do it. I needed several people to help me, and I thought I'd found a couple of them, but then one developed cancer and died, and the other one got a job offer and moved away, so I lost all that. Then Dayton Lesbian Gay Center was getting ready for their first Pride Parade, and the idea came to me of having a banner made. I was a member of at the time it was Gay and Lesbian Bisexual Veterans of America, and they changed their name right before our parade to American Veterans for Equal Rights, and they had a new logo. So I took that logo to a banner maker, and they made a banner for it. At the time, I didn't know that they put veterans at the head of a parade, so I was right behind the police car in the very first parade that they had here in Dayton for the Gay Pride Parade.
That's great.
And a fellow in Columbus heard about it, and he came over the next year and was in the parade, and then he went home and started a chapter in Columbus called Braver, which stood for Buckeye Region of American Veterans. We were in parades in Columbus and Cincinnati and Dayton, and he even went up to Cleveland. I couldn't get up off work to go up to Cleveland, so I missed that one. But he also talked the mayor of Columbus into talking to the Veterans Administration, and we were the first group of openly gay people in a national veterans parade in Columbus for Veterans Day. So I've enjoyed all of this.
Yeah, and then how did you find Rainbow Elder Care? How did you come to Rainbow Elder Care?
Well, I went to the Dayton Pride Parade to help my neighbor out who was running for office, and spent the whole day down there and was talking to a young lady, and I mentioned to her about SAGE, and she said, well, there's a group here in Dayton called Rainbow Elder Care. And she said they have a table down there, and so I went down after I finished talking with her and picked up their literature and got a hold of them and went to one of their meetings, and they invited me to join them, and it's been a blessing ever since.
So things have changed a lot for LGBTQ people over the last 50 years. This is the 50th anniversary of Stonewall here in 2019. And you've seen all of it. You've seen all the changes that have happened over the last 50 years. When you think about that, what do you have to say about it?
From what I have read and heard, it's individual grassroots people like myself, hundreds, thousands of us that have effected change through the years. One of the biggest changes was Evan Wolfson when he got behind same-sex marriage, and that was his pet project for about 10 or 15 years till he got that legalized, got that through the Supreme Court, had to take it clear of the Supreme Court. So that was a big break for us, but now they're trying to whittle that away from us. And in the next 50 years, I'm not quite sure, unless everybody sticks together and starts fighting, I'm not sure how it's going to play out, because I was just reading recently that violence is up quite a bit against LGBT people just in the last year or so. So it's going to be a fight for a while in the future.
What do you think years from now things will be like? What would you like them to be like?
I had hoped that we would be totally mainstream and there wouldn't be a difference between us and them, between gay people, LGBT people, and straight people. But if some of these churches have their way and some of the politicians have their way, why, it's going to be a struggle. I just had hoped that we had passed all this, but when I watched the women's struggle over abortion rights, I think if that comes to pass, that the next thing will be same-sex marriage, and that they'll start trying to do away with us. So it's sort of scary, but it's challenging also. Mm-hmm. Gives us something to work on.
Do you attribute a lot of that to the current administration or the administration that was elected?
Yes, absolutely.
To the Trump administration?
Yep.
And why do you think that is?
I'm not quite sure. His mentor when he was in his 20s was Roy Cohen. And Roy Cohen taught him how to fight and be so stubborn and so whatever word you want to use, taught him all the tricks that he's going through right now. And when Roy Cohen died of AIDS, Trump completely abandoned him. And then he has picked a vice president that's from Indiana that's known for being against LGBT rights, and even tried to take legislation away from Ryan White in I believe it was Kokomo when he was first infected through
a hemophiliac
hemophiliac
for a blood transfusion.
Yeah. And uh, so uh, It's just these people seem to think that we choose this lifestyle, and there's just too many millions of people that in the world that would not want to go against everything that religion teaches them. So I just it's sort of scary in a way. Mm-hmm. Sort of scary. Yeah.
So Ryan White funds were, that was the legislation that was passed back in the 90s to help fund a lot of HIV and AIDS research and treatment and prevention. And a lot of the states still get Ryan White funds to help support those efforts state by state. And so, yes, both Trump and Mike Pence, his vice president when he was governor of Indiana in particular, have tried to redirect some of those funds to other things. So I think that's what you were probably thinking about.
Exactly, exactly.
So what advice would you have for younger LGBTQ people?
Come out, okay. Come out. They can't, there's too many of us out of the closet today. They can't push us. We're not going to go back into the closet again. That's just a dream they seem to have. But anyone that's questioning themselves or thinks they're gay, I suggest you come out, because it gets easier after you come out. It's a big burden off of your shoulders. You can be yourself, and you don't have to go through life lying about everything that you do and all that. And so many of the people of my generation got married. They were told they had to get married and have children. And it wrecked a lot of people's families. So,
because they got married, were gay or LGBTQ.
Correct, correct. So, I'm lucky that I didn't question who I was. I was knew pretty much exactly what was going on with myself, and mm-hmm. and I didn't have to go through all that.
So, when you think back about all the things that we've talked about and your life, what are you most proud of?
Probably the fact that first Pride Parade, that banner for American Veterans for Equal Rights, led another man to go to Columbus and start a chapter over there for Ohio. And I believe that chapter at its peak probably had somewhere between 15 and 20 veteran members. That was just a unexpected plus for having that banner made, and I had no idea when I did that where it was going to lead, but I'm proud of the fact that he saw it and he asked me to be the president, but I was working 10 and 12 hours a day and unusual hours, and I told him, I said, Todd, I think would be better off if you become the president, because you're a retired military and have the time to do it, and you're in Columbus. There's more people in Columbus. It's just a bigger city to do something like that. So mm-hmm. It worked out great.
So kind of along that same line of thinking, how do you want to be remembered? You're 77?
77. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know how I want to be remembered other than that I was trying to make the world a better place for the next generation of LGBT people, and I'm still working at it, and sort of enjoy trying to change people. And when I came out at General Motors,
In what year was that?
That was in 1996. The lady that I told, I told her, I walked over to her and I said, Molly, there's something I need to tell you. I said, I'm gay. And she put her arms around me and gave me a great big hug. And she says, we love you just the way you are. And she said, if anyone bothers you, you send them to me. And when nobody did bother me, I the group I came out in was one of the best groups that I worked at there. And so I had a pleasant coming out at General Motors. Mm-hmm. Now I went a few years later transferred to another department, which didn't go quite as well. They didn't like gay people, but mm-hmm.
And what was that about?
It was just their beliefs. They just didn't want me in that department. So
what department was that?
That was the body shop.
Okay.
I was on the chassis line when I came out. They were very friendly, very, very nice group. It was more isolated because you were in little cages with robots that did the work, and you fed the robots parts.
I see.
And so there was not the closeness that you have with people right side beside you on a line. Mm-hmm.
So your advice would be come out. If you don't come out, then you know you can't change people's lives if you don't come out. Is that what your advice would be?
If you come out, they see who you are, and they see if they've got a brain, they see that you're no different than you were before you came out. You're still the same person. And that changes their mind as to LGBT people. If you stay hidden, then they won't know that there's so many I need to have this thought out before I talk. As more and more people come out and the world sees that there's gay people next to them and they're in houses next to them and across the street and they're just gay people all over the country. And before when in the 60s when I was first discovered that I was gay, no one knew a gay person. And it's partly because of Harvey Milk. When he was elected out there in California, that was one of his sayings was come out wherever you are. And I believe that's helped change the world. And the HIV epidemic, that helped change us too, because they saw how many thousands of people were dying from a disease that the government did absolutely nothing about. And so they couldn't hide from it then, when with all the people that were dying in the 80s and early 90s, why it became common knowledge that there were gay men everywhere. Mm-hmm. And that pretty much changed the world too.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thanks for your time. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Yeah.